Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dorky Mets Podcast. I am your host, Charlie DeLuca, and with me, as always, are Del Alba and Cornet Hogeveen. It is a depressing time in Mets land as the season ended for our beloved Metropolitans Sunday night at Citi Field with their Game 3 loss at the hand of the San Diego Padres. So the Mets season has officially come to an end. So obviously this question kind of has its own answer to it, but how are you guys doing? Especially you, Del, we missed you last week.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sorry I missed last week. It was a great podcast. You too, by the way. I wasn't needed on there. But yeah, I'm still a little sore. Yeah. I haven't worn my Mets hat in a few days. I try to keep away from Mets related topic, which is hard because I like watching, you know, the playoffs. And it keeps reminding me of, especially when the Padres do well. I'm like, ah. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, we will. Cornet, how about you? I heard you went to a pretty lit concert the other night.
Well, actually, yeah, I went to a Machine Gun Kelly yesterday. My girlfriend is a big fan of Machine Gun Kelly. And he was performing in Amsterdam. And I mean, I don't mind his music, but it's not the type of concerts I go to. But it was a pretty neat show. So yeah, I enjoyed myself as well. So it was a great evening.
Yeah, there you go. Some Machine Gun Kelly to drown your sorrows as a
yes, exactly.
Always a good combination.
to put a smile on my face.
Yes, exactly.
But yes, it's. I mean, it's difficult. I'm still wearing my Mets shirt, by the way, so that's still an everyday thing over here. So Del, come on. But yeah, it's obviously, especially after winning 101 games in a year, you expect to go further than a wild card round. So definitely disappointing, and it definitely hurts in the middle of the night on Sunday between Monday that. We lost.
Yeah. No, let's get right into it then with the Mets and Padres. Mets here on Friday night. Going into it, obviously, Scherzer on the mound. First playoff game at Citi Field in 6 years. So I feel like there was a lot of hype and a lot of excitement around the team and the fans, but Scherzer, for whatever reason, decided to not show up for a second straight start. A lot of home runs early on. You know, they went down big early. I think it was 6-0 at the end of the fourth inning, and the Padres coasted from there. Escobar had a home run, which amounted to all the Mets offense for the evening. And so the Padres took game one, 7-1. Game two was a little bit different. DeGrom came out and seemed to be like old DeGrom in that first inning, a couple of strikeouts, absolutely dismantled Juan Soto on a couple of 100-plus mile-per-hour fastballs in that first inning. The Mets scored early. DeGrom gave up the lead, but then the Mets were able to score 4 runs in the, I think it was the 7th inning, if I'm not mistaken, the 6th inning maybe. Can't remember exactly which inning it was. Big inning, though, for the Mets. McNeil with a double with the bases loaded, and they were able to work their at-bats against Blake Snell. So a much better performance from the offense. And then they were able to hang on to a 7-3 win despite Adafato Vino doing his best K-Rod impression, trying to give up the lead late. And then Sunday night, the deciding game three was very disappointing. The offense showed absolutely nothing. One hit the entire game. Chris Bassett did not pitch well, and the Mets thing in game three, ending their season after the wild card round. 101 wins, like Cornet said, second place in the NL East, but they advanced no farther than the wild card round. Buck Showalter's first year ends in a lot of disappointment and a lot of sour taste in the mouths of Met fans, so to speak. So I guess we'll start off with this topic, and Cornet, you could take it away here. What did you see from the Mets, both offensively and on the pitching side, that just wasn't really clicking against the Padres, who obviously came in with Yu Darvish on the mound, dominated from pitch one, and the offense looked to be really teeing up the Mets starting pitching, especially Scherzer and Bassett.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Darvish. We always have issue with Darvish. We knew that before that game. So, yeah, I mean, if your ace gives up six runs in four innings, it's tough for every team, I think, in that scenario to come back, especially against the guy who owns us. So I think that was the starting point of a difficult series. And yeah, that was such an important game for us to have. Then we bounced back sorta in game two. And why I said sorta is because, like you mentioned, even with a pretty big lead, it got dicey in the end. Josh Bell came up against Seth Lugo as a tying run. So that, to me, wasn't a, we got it back type of game. We used all of our good relievers. We left a ton of runners on base early, if I remember correct. So it's yep. that seventh yep. inning where we came through, but we had a lot of other opportunities early against Blake Snell to do more. So it was a win, and I was happy about it, but it wasn't for me a win which told, well, we're going to win the series. So I was very, very nervous before the Sunday game. I didn't have a good feeling about it. We joked about it on the chat, but yeah, unfortunately it came true, and the offense just couldn't do anything against Musgrove. And yeah, that's, I mean, if you collect one hit, it doesn't matter if Bassett allowed run in seven. That would be a tough task after Musgrove and seven, and then the Padres bullpen with their good arms left had that one covered, and it sucks. But I mean, honestly, we got outplayed in a lot of ways in this three game series.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up a lot of good points there, Corny. And that last, you know, word you said about getting outplayed, I think from pitch one on Friday night, it seemed, you know, it was that little bloop single by Profar to start off the series. And then two batters later, Bell hit a home run, and, you know, four batters into the game, it was 2-0 Padres. And I don't know, I think that it was just kind of a very ominous, very bad omen to start off the series like that, and especially facing someone like Yu Darvish, who has dominated the Mets, not just this year, but it seems like they can never really figure him out. And I think that, you know, that just kind of set the tone for the rest of the series, Dal.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, let's not forget the San Diego Padres on paper is a great team. They underperform all season long, and in the playoffs, you know, their pieces finally connected. It's unfortunate that the Mets didn't win one more game, or, you know, take one game against the Braves in the last series, because that would have been the difference. I would have much rather faced the Phillies, you know, but they're giving the Dodgers a hard time too. It's a combination of the Mets, for me, that the way they ended the season seems like they ended like a bunch of wounded animals, where the pitching wasn't there. Max Scherzer, I don't care what you tell me, he was hurt. He did not look like Max Scherzer. He might be hiding something there. He looked horrible. Compared to what we're used to seeing, he was just not on point. His, you know, it's just unfortunate that he wasn't all there. DeGrom, he gave us his best. You know, I was a little worried about DeGrom considering his last few starts before the season ended, but he did well enough to get us the W. But the bullpen was kind of shaky, and it's like a 4.5-hour game, guys. I mean, the whole time, it felt like I was having a heart attack the whole time. I mean, I had to, you know, drink lots of beer and alcohol to calm down, but not that I'm promoting that alcoholism. Then the last game, Musgrove, look, the guy's thrown a no-hitter recently. His last, I think, five starts, he was complete dominant. He was locked in. And the hitters were kind of messing with Bass's timing, right? Like, you saw this. Musgrove's his numbers were up like crazy, and he was suspicious with that super shiny ears of his. But, you know, Andrew McCutchen said that, like, some pitchers, they put Icy Hot on their ears, stimulate them to make them, like, I don't know, get intense. But whatever Musgrove did, it was working for him. His spin rates were up on all his pitches, and the Mets couldn't figure him out. His curveballs were just cutting down. He was breaking bats. He was just, like, unhittable. The offense just couldn't handle it, and that was just the end of that. It's just really unfortunate.
Yeah, no, it is unfortunate, and we could talk about the Musgrove and the extremely long and arduous check by the umpires and the caressing of the ears of Musgrove by the umpires, if you guys want to get into that a little bit. But I think, you know, you heard Gary Cohen on the post-game show basically say that if you're going to do something like that, you better be right, and Buck wasn't right, and so it was pretty embarrassing and kind of a desperate last effort to, I mean, rally his guys, get Musgrove out of the game. You know, you're down 4-0 at that point in an elimination game. So, you know, it did, like Gary said, it did kind of reek of, a Hail Mary, a last resort type of thing.
I mean, look, Buck saw the same thing that a lot of people were seeing, you know, that the numbers, his spin rate was up, like, by over 100, you know, in a lot of his pitches. And it's kind of concerning that his ears were also, like, lit up. I don't think Musgrove was cheating. He was just locked in. And also, keep in mind that San Diego were messing with Bassett all day. They were just stopping him, breaking his rhythm. So, Buck, I think that's part of the reason why Buck wanted to do it. It's like, okay, you want to mess with my guy? Well, let's mess with your guy, you know, and use that as an excuse to kind of mess with the timing. But Musgrove was just locked in. And we couldn't do anything. That's my take,
at least. Yeah, honestly, I don't think there's anything wrong with checking him. If his spin rates are up and he has a shiny ear, there's reason to doubt it. I would have done it earlier, because we were talking about on the chat already in like the third or second inning, and we checked the spin rates back then, and we saw it was up already. So I have no problem with Buck checking. If he doesn't cheat, oh well, it's a check. I mean, we make it such a big deal out of it, which at some point is logical. It has been part of the game. Cheating has been part of the game. And yes, I can understand Musgrove being angry for getting checked possibly cheating. But on the other hand, there are signs that could indicate that he was. So why wouldn't you check it? I don't get the issue with it personally.
And Cornet, if we would have lost the game, if the Mets would have lost the game and Buck had it not checked, that would have raised another like debate, right?
Yeah, that's why the umpires are there, and that's why they do the check. And like I said, I have absolutely no issue with it. If one of my pitchers or the Mets pitchers would have his spin rates up and have shiny spot in his neck, check it. If you cheat, you cheat. And if you don't cheat, you have nothing to hide. So why would you be mad about it? I get that Musgrove got mad, but I don't get after the game the negative attention it got on Buck and anything. I just don't really understand why people are mad that they check him with. We could all see it. So
with it, either the check, I just think that it should have happened earlier, or it should have been more of gamesmanship than just going out to the umpires and having them check Musgrove for what seemed like forever. Obviously, it didn't end up mattering, because at that point the Mets were down and the Mets didn't get a hit off of the Padres' other pitchers that game either. So just an all-around disappointing series. And a really, I don't know what the right word is, crappy end. Crappy end to a otherwise really exciting year. you know, the Mets have only won 100 games four times in their history. So that is a good, you know, rare feat in and of itself. But obviously, we had a lot higher hopes than the wild card round of the playoffs.
That's a good way of putting it, Charlie. You know, since we are a PG rated show,
I was trying to think of a word that could be included in the podcast.
Yeah, crappy is the right word.
On the other end, by the way, we went from 77 wins to an 101 win in a year.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It's not all. Obviously, with winning 101 games, you want to go further, but it's not all depressing, although this offseason will be very important, but that's for later podcasts, everybody.
Yeah, we'll get into that later. And, you know, on that topic of improving so much, Cornet, Lindor had a pretty interesting quote after the game, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically he said that, you know, obviously it's disappointing that they didn't win the World Series, because that's the goal. You know, he apologized to the fans and, you know, appreciated them coming out to the games and stuff like that. And then he said that, you know, it was kind of a step in the right direction, though. You know, he was here last year, and obviously that was a bit of a clown show with the whole rat raccoon thing and, you know, Javi Baez coming in with the thumbs down. So this year there was none of that. You know, that it was the first year, I think, in – fandom that there were no random field players getting injured, you know, freeing a boar from a trap on their farm, or pitchers and managers threatening reporters in the clubhouse. There was none of that this year. So that is a good sign, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
And then Lindor kind of without saying that this is kind of a foundational year, obviously with the payroll, kind of a World Series. Now I'm not gonna say World Series or bust, but certainly World Series aspirations. But obviously none of these guys, or very few of these guys, have played in the playoffs. You know, Alonso, McNeil, Canna has limited playoff experience. Obviously, DeGrom and Scherzer have, but. You know, a lot of the big hitters in the Mets lineup have very little playoff experience. So I think it was a good, like Lindor was saying, and I want to get your guys' take as well, like your opinion about how this year is viewed in terms of the building blocks it lays for maybe the future success of the team. You know, as Steve Cohen said when he first bought the team, 3 to 5 years, he wants to be winning World Series. This year just ended year three of the Cohen ownership. So in the next 2 years, the Mets want to be winning World Series, or else Steve Cohen's prediction turned out to be wrong.
Well, I mean, what I think about that, Charlie, is like we're half of the roster, 26 men roster, they're gone this year, so. You got to kind of find a way to build a team that can compete for the World Series. You had your guys. DeGrom's a free agent. We might not get him back. You know, we're going to talk about all this in the offseason, of course. But there's just how are you going to be able to fill those holes? And, I mean, we have a nice core, but we still need more pieces. And it's going to be interesting to see. I think that they can, but, you know – They're going to have to trade some of their farm pieces and make some big signings.
I think it will definitely be a long offseason with a lot of tough decisions to make.
On the other hand, last couple of years, we didn't really make – we kept our prospects this year, so we have some prospects coming up. I mean, Alvarez, we got a nice draft with Parada, who's probably going to be there quickly. So I think that's a plus, and if you look at our everyday lineup, I think only Nimmo is going and the rest is staying. The bullpen, we will miss a lot of our bullpen and our starting rotation. So their main focus will be those two parts. And I honestly believe that I will talk about that more in a future episode, but we have some pieces in the minor leagues in the bullpen that, in my opinion, can be part of the bigger group next year instead of adding free agency. And a good winning team needs to also get the minor leaguers up. And I think that will probably start happening this year and into next year, that we got some good players coming up, because development is still one of the bigger parts of winning, of getting a winning culture. And then his money from Steve Cohen will add the pieces where you will need it. And I think that's still possible for us to do. And by the way, this ended the second year of Cohen era, right?
Yeah, it was the second year.
No, the second year. Okay, my mistake. I thought it was the third year.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. There was that, like, weird thing where he, like, was going to buy the team, and then it, like, fell through, and then it was the next offseason where he officially bought the team. So I got the timeline all mixed up. So year two. So we're right on schedule then, right?
Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
Years left. We're only going to have, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as our current rotation right now, and I'm not including the depth pieces, I'm talking about the main guys. Mm-hmm. We're just keeping Scherzer. I mean, he's the only one that's certain for next year, right? We're losing Bassett.
Yeah.
We're losing DeGrom.
A lot of those guys have player options. Like, I think Carrasco and Bassett and obviously DeGrom have player options, but I would assume that DeGrom and Bassett will opt out because we'll get more money in free agency, whether they resign with the Mets or not. But yeah, no, you're right. The rotation is pretty much just Scherzer. And then the bullpen, I saw this the other day via Michael Mayer on Twitter. The only returning bullpen guys who threw 20 innings or more.
Smith.
Who are under contract are Drew Smith, Adonis Medina, and Steven Nogosic. So those are the only guys who pitched more than 20 innings who are slated to return next year. As of right now, obviously, there's going to be more. There's going to be moves to be made in the offseason. But, yeah, the pitching is where the Mets are getting decimated this offseason unless they re-sign some guys.
Yeah, I'm not that worried about the bullpen, though. I mean, I think they will – they're already talking to Edwin Diaz, I read before. Yep. He's being a free agent, so you have your closer there. I really like Nogosic, so I think he – deserves a spot next year. For the rotation, I would put Peterson in that fifth slot. So then you have three there. But bullpen pieces, I mean, Ottavino, we signed him for $4 million last year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And those guys are so up and down. Besides the elite guys, you have so many up and down relief guys. So I'm not that worried about the bullpen. The rotation is the main part where we need to spend.
Yeah, no, definitely a lot of volatility from relievers. It'll be interesting. And I think this begs the next question from the Mets for this season. Speaking of bullpen, is that I feel like a lot of the issues, I think, Dale, you touched on this earlier, it seemed like the Mets broke down a little bit and just got the grind of a season kind of caught up to them at the end. You know, you saw guys like Tanner really struggle in September. Alonso wasn't quite the same he was in the beginning of the season down the stretch. Obviously, Scherzer and DeGrom really struggled the last two starts. DeGrom for the month or so before the playoffs started. And so I think that begs the question is, obviously, hindsight's 2020, but also we kind of talked about this when at the deadline, right? At the trade deadline, when the Mets didn't really make any big moves. Darren Ruff turned out to be a disaster. Givens, didn't really give them that much high leverage. You know, they, you know, another was another arm in the bullpen, but certainly wasn't someone who, you know, he was pitching in close games, late in games. So I think that begs the question, you know, did the Mets do enough at the deadline to supplement this team who, like we just were talking about, has a lot of free agents coming up, and this might have been their best shot at a World Series for the next couple of years?
Well, I mean, if the Mets – let's say the Mets did make bigger move to get rental players, then you're kind of hurting your future. I mean, the next season – we'll be talking about, well, what do we do now with we have another hole to fill because we're losing that guy, you know, and we don't have the prospects to replace him because we traded him away. So it's a – I mean, it's – baseball is a long, long sport. Escobar got hot in September. You know, some guys got cold. I don't know. I'm not too concerned about that. It's they played well. They played well enough to make it with the team they have now. Cohen is a smart guy. We have a strong analytics department, so we'll add the pieces that we need in the future.
So yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about it. Yeah, and I mean, I know you are a prospect guy, Dell, but I think just to play devil's advocate, it's tough, I think, to look back at the season and be like, well, they're, you know, they're set up for the next couple of years. They head on to their prospects. If you ask a Cub fan if they care that Gleyber Torres is on the Yankees, I would venture to say almost all of them would say that they don't because they have a World Series because they got our oldest Chapman, right? If you ask – you know, I'm trying to think of other deadline. You know, if you ask Royals fans, you know, what if they would have rather kept the prospects or traded for Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist in 2015, right? I think the benefit of winning a World Series, and I don't know if the Mets would have won a World Series this year had they gone out and gave up whoever to get Wilson Contreras or gave up whoever to get, you know, Josh Hader from the Brewers instead of him going to the Padres. It's tough to say, you know, because I don't know what the cost might have been. But at the same time, I think if they would have done that, if they would have won the World Series, you know, if Mark Vientos or Brett Beatty or Francisco Alvarez became a 10-time All-Star with the Chicago Cubs, I wouldn't have really minded it if it meant that the Mets won two or three World Series or even one had they gotten someone like Contreras or Hader.
Well, I mean, you got to – I'm sorry. I know because Cornet's probably got a bunch of things to say too, but the pieces that were available in the deadline were your Juan Soto's, right? We couldn't afford Juan Soto. The Nationals were not going to give us Juan Soto. They were not going to give us Josh Bell. We those two were the big pieces that were available, and they were gone, right? And then as far as, you know, Contreras goes, we have McCann and Nito and Alvarez in the cusp. Like, what – do we really need another catcher? Yeah, he could play DH, but you know, he kind of wasn't all the same in the after the All-Star break. So it's a good thing we didn't make the move. But yeah, Corn, I want to hear what you got to say, man.
Well, I don't. The one thing from the deadline I did mind was an extra reliever. I've mentioned it a couple of times here. But like Dell mentioned earlier in podcast, we heard that those asking prices were pretty darn high. So probably that was part of the reason. I wouldn't overpay for a Contreras or Josh Hader. I don't think that they would be the main difference. The players the Mets got in Vogelbach and Ruff, I mean... both the players, I didn't really mind because Ruff had success against left-handers. I didn't like the trade because I think we gave up too many, but the players could have been a good platoon, which obviously didn't work out. Givens, I think, was better once after his first outing was so dreadful. I mean, he got it down to like a low 4 ERA. I think that's pretty impressive. In 2 months after allowing, I think it was 6 runs with one out in the first game he pitched.
Yeah.
So I think he did fine. I believe that he will stay, by the way, because he also has an option for $3.5 million. So to me, it's almost a given. See what I did there?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, given that English is not your first language, Corey.
Yeah, thank you.
You could work in a pun in your second language.
But overall, on the deadline, I wouldn't think it would be smart for the years to come. Obviously, if you eventually win a World Series with the team, but I mean let me think. 12 teams right now, solid teams who are fighting for that, and anything can happen right now. I mean, that's just not a given, even if you have Contreras or anybody else. It's definitely not a given. So I wouldn't give it up for maybe a little bit more of a shot right now, actually, at least.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I just think that brass and their, you know, upper management knew that they had a lot of free agents this year and knew that they, you know, can't re-sign them all. You can't re-sign.
But we can see what happens after this offseason. I mean, if this offseason provides a very disappointing offseason, then you can say, oh, well, why didn't we do more last deadline if this is what we're going to do with this offseason?
Yeah, no, that's fair. I just think with all the impending free agents, this might have been their best chance to win a World Series with this group of guys.
I hope not.
I hope not either, but I don't know. It'll be tough, I think, to win 100 games consistently for the next 2 or 3 years before guys like
I'm not as down as you on this. I think we will be fine.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic, but I know how it normally goes for the Mets. but I think another thing that we need to get into here besides the deadline is how poorly the Mets played in September. You know, all that talk was, you know, obviously with the division race still in hand, with the Braves and the Mets going neck and neck all the way, I feel like people and, you know, us three included, felt that the Mets were always going to come through because of the September schedule and how light it was. In reference to the quality of teams that the Mets were playing. But it didn't end up going well. They got swept by the Cubs at home. They lost 2 of 3 to the Nationals at home, dropped a couple games to the Pirates. And so I think, you know, again, hindsight's 20/20, just like with the deadline. But I feel like, if you know, looking at how the season ended and how badly they played two out of the three games against the Padres, you can kind of look back at September and kind of mark that as the start of the Mets playing kind of mediocre ball, which is obviously expected. It's hard to play. You're not going to win 15, 20 games every month. It's just unfortunate that the Mets decided to play their worst ball the last 6 weeks of the season rather than in April and May, Corne.
Yeah, I think if you look at the month plus, so from September on and a little bit in October, we weren't the team. We didn't play like the team we played in the other 5 months, and maybe we were out of gas. Maybe, I mean, long season. We weren't in our best stretch, and a lot of times, especially in the playoffs, you see that the teams who are in a good stretch are mostly playing really well. Think about the Nationals in 2019, who got hot in the second half and pushed it through in the playoffs. I remember the Colorado Rockies in 07, if I remember correctly, yep, who had that wild card, who picked it up with a late run in the season and went all the way to the World Series. And with that September into this October, I didn't have the feeling that the Mets were able to beat the Padres, Dodgers, maybe Braves after that, and then maybe the Astros. That would probably be the most thought of route they would have. And after this September, I didn't expect the Mets. I did expect them to beat the Padres, although the Padres, like Dell mentioned, weren't exactly the fifth seed team. I would much rather face the Cardinals or the Phillies both than the Padres. So we were a bit unlucky with that. But we didn't just, I mean, probably a bit gassed out. I mean, our top run producers played almost every game this year. It was, yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly what happened, but that it wasn't good for the last month plus, let me say that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think it was. Dell, you have anything to add?
I'm just agreeing with what Corny said. Go ahead.
No, I mean, it was, yeah, I think that's, that is kind of the start of where things maybe took a turn for the worse. And I feel like it's more, even more disappointing because everyone was saying that September was so easy for the Mets and they were going to dominate these teams and they ended up not. And then they ended up having to play in the wild card round. And we know how that went.
But so I read something. I read an interesting stat about the Cubs, by the way, because the Cubs is getting swept by the Cubs is one of the main reasons we didn't win the division. But I read somewhere that they were about the second best team in the National League against above 500 teams. So the, I saw that somewhere on Twitter, and I don't know exactly remember what their record was exactly, but it. But I thought it was behind the Mets. They were the second best team against over 500 teams, which to me is really interesting.
That is really interesting because the Cubs were not very good this year. So they played up to their opponent, I guess.
The record for above 500 teams was 37-58. Maybe it was the second half of the year where they had a better stretch.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Well, yeah, anyway, I mean, I don't know. It was just a tough – it was a tough last six weeks of the season. Let's turn to something a little bit more positive now. And Dell and Corner, you guys will each give a moment. We'll do this throughout the rest of the playoffs. We'll probably do an episode every 2 weeks now that the Mets have been eliminated and the playoffs are still going on. And then when the World Series ends, we'll get talking about, off-season moves and do some shows during the winter. But as of right now, we will start doing a little bit of a positive vibes to the podcast and talk about some top moments from the Mets 2022 season. And today's episode, Dell and Corny will each give one of their most exciting, their best, their most thrilling moments of the Mets 2022 season. So I guess we'll go to Dell first. What was your one moment that stood out to you from the Mets season this year?
So I was going to go with an obvious one because I was at the game of Philly, but I figured Corny might talk about that as one of his moments. So I want to change it up a little bit. My favorite moment, it was probably Jacob deGrom's debut. I mean, he came in there just like trailblazing, just he was hitting 102. He was just, wow, this is the guy, he hasn't pitched in a year, and his arm is like golden, and he's just getting all these strikes, and that slider looks ridiculous, and you know, and it was against the Braves, I believe, right?
The Nationals.
Nationals. I knew it was a division rival, but yeah, it was such an amazing start to see. It brought me lots of joy, and it goes to show DeGrom at his peak performance what he can do.
Yeah, no, that was definitely exciting. And it was kind of, oh my God, this is the DeGrom we're getting with Scherzer. What can we possibly, who can beat the Mets right now with those two guys at the top of the rotation?
Negative spin, Charlie. Don't take a negative spin.
We went through some positives. Come on.
No, you're right. Keep it light. Corny, what was your best moment from the season, or one of your best moments?
Well, funny thing, Dell said, I didn't pick the Philadelphia game because I thought Dell would pick the Philadelphia game. I went for today's episode with another crazy game I went to because I was pretty lucky this year. And that was the no-hitter, the Cono no against the Phillies on that Friday in late April. Being there at the ballpark, seeing a no-hitter, which I'm a true pitching guy. I love pitching. So for me, a no-hitter / perfect game, obviously, is the cream of the crop. I mean, I don't know exactly how you guys say that, but...
Yes, no, that was good. That was the cream of the crop, yeah.
And
you're 2 for 2 on your English puns.
Yeah,
two for two.
It's a good day. It's a good day. I've lost my words less than you, Charlie, this episode. So I'm getting ahead of you. But yeah, that was just a crazy game to be at. That final inning. I mean, honestly, it was after Lugo got that final out in the eighth. Then you thought, oh well, Edwin Diaz comes in and we have a no hitter going. Wow, this is gonna happen, right? It's gonna happen, right? And then it happens, and that was the most joy I experienced in Citi Field.
Was that the same day he almost went immaculate, Diaz? Was that the same game? Well, that was a different game.
No, that wasn't the same game. He did strike out the side, but I don't think it was on 10 pitches what you're referring to.
Yeah, no, that was early on. I feel like people really forget it. That it seems so long ago, right, that was this season. That was back in early April. Of course, the Mets were wearing their black jerseys on a Friday night home game. So that was definitely
it was cold.
Yeah, and a classic cold April night game. Yeah. At Citi Field, and yeah, only the second no-hitter in franchise history after, obviously, Johan Santana back in 2012. So, two pretty good ones, I think. Yeah, definitely games that will stand out in the memories of Met fans for this year. And we'll look forward, or I will look forward, to hearing from you guys throughout the offseason about some classic Mets games from this year. So to wrap up the show, just like last week, we will go to Cornet for some trivia. Now, Dell, you have a lot to live up to because last week...
Yeah, you got them both. I
got the trivia right. So I don't know. You're taking a back seat now for the trivia. So we'll see what you can do this week. But Cornet, take it away.
Well, it's a tough one. I'm going to say that. But it's another Who Am I? I had the lowest ERA for the Mets pitchers in 2014. That's including unqualified pitchers. I had pitched my entire MLB career for the Mets. It started in 2012 and it ended in 2017. I did. After 2017, I did play in some minor league ball with other teams. This lefty collected 2 major league saves. His last was getting Bryce Harper in a memorable moment with the bases loaded with one out. He got him in a 1-2-3 double play when he was brought in to face Harper. And in his debut, he also came in with the bases loaded and one out. And he struck out Juan Francisco and Michael Bourne in 2012. Who am I?
I know who it is. Dale, you want to take a guess first?
No, go ahead, because I... For the sake of this, that's timing. I'm gonna have to think about it for a little bit. Go ahead.
All right, I know that I'm right. I mean, I'm 95% sure I'm right. I better be right because I'm talking about a big game. I'm gonna go with Josh Edgen.
Well, Charlie, 2 for 2.
Well, 3 for 3 actually.
Yeah, 3 for 3 actually.
I guess last week, yeah, I got both right. Yeah, there you go. No, I will say if you're gonna give any sort of trivia about like the 2010 to 2017 Mets, there's a pretty good chance that I get them right because that's the Met era where I remember the most, unfortunately, because they were so bad.
Yeah, but, that's a bit of the same for me. So you probably have a bit of an advantage on that point.
Those were I was like in middle school and high school, so I was watching pretty much every game. That you know what gave it away was the clue about the 1-2-3 double play because I remember listening to that game on the radio and thinking, oh my God, they're bringing in Josh Edgen to Bryce Harper. Like, this is going to end horribly. He's going to hit a walk-off grand slam. But then he got the 1-2-3 double play. And of course, Howie Rose gave a pretty emphatic call on the radio. So yeah, now that was a memorable, random game that you don't really ever think about as a Met fan until it gets brought up again.
If you can remember pitching, you'll be good because – I'm sure 90% of the time it's going to be a relief pitcher.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
The next Who Am I won't be a relief pitcher.
Sure.
I love pitching, guys. Pitching is my thing. Yeah. Sorry.
Always. No, I know you do, especially lefties.
Yeah, Johan Santana, go.
All right, so that will do it for this week's episode of the Dorky Mets podcast. We will talk to you next time. We will try to provide you with some comfort. And as always, let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets.